Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Right now, is the Bundesliga the best league in the world? Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lawless, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue colored glasses. This show, we'll be talking Champions League Cinderella, baby. What American had the best season in Europe? American sports exceptionalism? Detroit U.S. Open Cup lean, baby. A game without offside, what would that look like? MLS valuations, and so much more. But first, joining me as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox Soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how you doing on this Wednesday, May 8th in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. I'm at the midway point of my trip to New York.
You continue to be over there in New York. I am coming to you from the road. For those that are listening and can't see, I am on the road here in D.C. As I mentioned previously, I am here for the Congressional Soccer Match, the annual get-together of both sides of the aisle over there on the floor or on the field right around the corner here at Audi Field here in D.C. So I'm going to head over there tonight. I just saw Dwayne D. Rosario down in the lobby. A whole bunch of different people are going to be involved. You want to hear who's involved, Mossy? You want me to give you a little a heads up here?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I mentioned Dwayne D. Rosario, people you may know. Chris Seitz, former MLSer, Aleko Eskandarian, Fernando Fiore, colleague, been around for a while. So it's, like I said, it's broken up into the Republican side and the Democrat side. Tony Santa is coaching the Democrat side. I am coaching the Republicans. Let's see, who are some of the representatives that we have? Congressman. Let's see, Rick Larson from Washington, Sean Casten from Illinois, Willie Nickel from North Carolina, goes on and on. Greg Kassar from Texas. Let's see here. Anybody else? There's a lot of congresswomen and congressmen when it goes over there. Over here, let's see, who do we got? Dan Crenshaw from Texas, Don Bacon from Nebraska, Eric Swalwell from California. List goes on and on and on. Over on my side, John Harkes running around, Patrick Mullins, you might remember him, Sebastian Salazar from our friends over there at ESPN. So lots of celebrities, people in the soccer world, and then obviously a lot of politicians are going to be running around tonight. It's going to be fun. I'll send you some pictures and stuff. You can see it over there on my my feed. Have you watched anything, my friend?
Last night, I attended a Yankees-Astros game. I watched the Yankees spank the Astros 10-3. The starting pitcher for the Astros was Justin Verlander, who is the brother of our Fox Sports Digital colleague, Ben Verlander, host of the Flippin' Bats pod, the guy that Kiara has a big crush on. So it was fun to watch a big Yankees victory.
So your Yankees won. You were very excited.
Correct.
Okay. I mentioned last time that how horrible the Jerry Seinfeld frosted or unfrosted, whatever the hell it's called. I don't even know the name of it. It was bad. And I had left it with a couple of minutes at the end when the credits happened. The credits, I kid you not, are the only funny thing in the movie. It's because I went back and flicked it on and the credits came, so I finished it. So two thumbs down for that. I have a confession to make, Mossy. All right. You know my rule, my steadfast rule about I need to be able to binge it from start to finish. And so I'm not going to give any time back to the man. And I want to be done. I want to be able to say this is a done type of thing. Well, I made a mistake. you know this, and I'm sure a lot of folks out there. The Last of Us, you know this show?
Yes.
So apocalyptic zombie type of thing. I started watching it thinking that it was done, only to come and find out that they are in the process of shooting yet a whole new season where, you know, the apocalyptic type of survival genre continues on here. And so I binged it from start to finish in terms of the first season. And I've taken like a couple of years since then for this second season, but it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I have a vague recollection of people talking about it and it being, you know, kind of a cool thing. And I'm into it.
In that last episode, when Joel said to Ellie, it wasn't time that did it. I lost it and got a little misty in the Mossy household.
You
remember that scene?
You got emotional during a zombie apocalypse movie?
I did.
Christ. All right, here we go. Should we light this candle, my friend?
Let's do it.
Where should we start?
I don't know if you recall, but a couple of months ago, ESPN unveiled this performance index for American players. It's based on a mathematical formula. They take every American player, they factor in how many minutes they've played for their club, how good the club is, which they base on the Opta rankings, and then their importance to their club, which they take the team's results with the American on the field and without, and you put it all together and it spits out a list. They fully admit there are some flaws. It can produce some odd results, but overall, it does give you an interesting picture of how Americans have performed around the world this season. I mentioned they unveiled the first edition in March. They updated it last week with the European season winding down. And in their updated list, the top five are Weston McKennie, number one, Christian Pulisic, two, Anthony Robinson, three, Sergino Dest, four, and Malik Tillman, five. The only two non-European-based players in the top 20 are Zendejas at eight and Brandon Vasquez at 19. They both play in Liga MX. The highest MLS player is Quinn Sullivan of the Philadelphia Union at 26. Haji Wright is 28. Josh Sargent is 48. Thoughts?
Josh Sargent is what?
48. He gets punished because A, Norwich doesn't factor very high in Opta's club rankings, and B, in terms of the minutes played, remember, he missed a lot of time at the start of this season. Yeah. Haji Wright similarly gets punished because Coventry City aren't that high in the club rankings. So that's the reason for those positions.
Yeah. Okay. So we know that lists click, they sell, they are catnip to folks and evidence of what we're talking about right now. We also know that they're subjective. Yes, there are criteria, and I appreciate that they recognize that this isn't perfect. It will never be. I feel, you know, there's a sense of deja vu when we're talking about this, you know, especially when I do my MLS MVP and all that kind of stuff. I'm okay in terms of the first two, and I think whatever calculations they are using, it came out with two appropriate, Weston McKennie and Christian Pulisic. I can certainly argue Christian Pulisic, and I think that they are interchangeable at one and two. And before I looked at the list, because when we sent this around, I had Christian Pulisic at one and Weston McKennie at two, but I'm good with either way. And there is a debate as to where they fall, but I think everybody can agree that they both had stellar seasons and are worthy of that one spot. Anthony Robinson, he just kind of continues on and has been good for a long time, and maybe he even suffers because of his continuity. Sergino Dest, I think at four is, okay. Malik Tillman, then you're getting into like Chris Richards, Zendejas. Okay, again, this is club form. And Balogun at number nine. You know, the thing about Josh Sargent, before seeing this list, if you would ask me where Josh Sargent was, there's not a chance in hell that I would have said he was not in the top 10. And so I think I would put Josh Sargent much, much higher, obviously, than they had. You said the only MLS player or the highest MLS player was who?
Quinn Sullivan at 26. Now, MLS gets hurt a little bit because of the calendar.
Yeah.
The time frame doesn't cover that much MLS play, so they also acknowledge that in their write-up for this list.
It brings up a bigger question, and you know, I think I'm going to talk about it later on in the show about, you know, these heady days in which we live in, and the confidence and I think fair excitement about the talent and the depth of talent and the sheer numbers of talent. And yet, you know, are they that much better than they were in the past? Anyway, it's a longer conversation, but
I agree. That's where I was going to go to. I think you look at this list and what struck me is that marriage of Americans starting regularly for quote unquote big European clubs you're still not seeing a lot of that. It's only a couple of guys on this list. And then you start working your way down, and it's either guys that are playing a lot of minutes, but for lesser clubs, or guys that are backups for big clubs like a Moose or a Timmy Weah. So you still want to get to that point if you're the U.S. where you have a squad full of players that are playing regularly for the big boys in Europe. And we don't quite have that yet. So to me, that undercuts a little bit of this notion that Berhalter haters like to put forth, that he's squandering what is this mind-blowing array of talent based on their Yanks abroad exploits.
Well, I do think that he has talent. And I do think if you're a, you know, pick your coach from the past, Bob Bradley, Steve Sampson, Bora, Bruce, they would certainly look at what, and Jurgen would certainly look at what Greg has and say, I don't want to hear any whining or complaining given the talent that they had. But maybe to your point, we have overvalued the players that we have. And I think that's letting Greg Berhalter off the hook, to be quite honest with you. I think the expectations that we have relative to the talent that we have, I think that they are fair and justified. But I understand your argument, and I understand the argument out there about what this team is and isn't. And when it comes to, because somebody asked me this on X a while ago about, you know, for example, the Olympics coming up and the development and all these players that we have. I was thinking last night, I was out to dinner when we were talking, when was the last time a player just kind of crashed into American soccer and everybody went, wow. And when I say American soccer, not just in terms of what he's doing on the field for the club, but also relative to the national team. We've really kind of set the usual suspects when it comes to the national team. And you look at this list and you look at all of the talent, quote unquote talent that we have out there, and this long list of players that are playing over in Europe. And just because you're playing Europe doesn't mean you're better than anybody else, and doesn't even necessarily mean that you're elite or good. But we do associate that with quality. But it's been a long time since we got excited about a young player for the national team coming in the way that we did. And I know that Christian Pulisic is a unique type of player, but we should have had somebody. We should have had somebody. And Flo is a little bit different. The Flo is, you know, Flo Balogun is a little bit different. We did get excited at that point, but I'm just, you know, my major point here is this summer, for example, when the Olympics are happening, obviously the men qualifying for the first time in multiple cycles now, I don't care if they win a game. What I care is that when you come out of the Olympics, there are some players that we say, you know what? That is a player for the national team. That is a player that can come in and challenge for a spot and challenge all of these players that now just seem to, you know, be with this team on a consistent basis. That to me is a successful Olympics. I'm not sure it's going to happen. And my point is that that hasn't happened in a long time. And that's a little bit disappointing. And that's a little bit concerning. What else, Mossy?
Well, you'll notice there are two PSV players in the top five. Destin Tillman, Pepe is 21. We talked about this on our last pod this past weekend. PSV clinched the Eredivisie title. Did you see the scenes from their celebrations? Ain't no party like an Eindhoven party.
Hey, listen, to the victor go the spoils. And, you know, you have a season like you did. And we've talked about how good it was. And, I mean, they didn't mess around. So I would expect them to party. Like it's 1999.
Now, those three were the last Americans involved in the UEFA Champions League this season. PSV went out to Dortmund in the round of 16, and Dortmund has kicked on from there as we transition to the UEFA Champions League semis, because on Tuesday, Borussia Dortmund punched their ticket to the final. It's their third final appearance. They won it in 97, and then were runners-up to Bayern at Wembley in 2013. We could have that same final in that same location again this season. Borussia Dortmund had beaten PSG 1-0 at home in the semifinal first leg. They won by the same score in the second leg in Paris. Mats Hummels with the only goal early in the second half, heading in a corner. PSG hit the woodwork four times in the second leg, six times over the two games, but could not score a single goal. So Mbappe and company crash out. Dortmund move on.
Set pieces, set pieces, set pieces. And Mats Hummels, I mean, I don't think anybody could have predicted. And, you know, I watched the post-game comments, and whether it was Thierry Henry or Schmeichel, all these you know, ex-players, now pundits, talking about how Hummels had kind of been That was it. He was moving on. He was done from the elite, and yet he turned back time here. Got the obviously an incredibly important goal. You know, first things first, this is an unmitigated disaster and a failure from PSG. And I know that's a backhanded compliment to Dortmund. Don't worry, they're going to get plenty of praise here. But if you are PSG, and you know that holy grail continues to be out there, and in this instance, when you got paired up with Dortmund for an opportunity to go to a final and finally get there, you squandered it away. To your point, Mossy, yes, they had plenty of opportunities, and the soccer gods didn't smile upon them, and they could certainly look to that. But I think there were very, very few people that looked at this Dortmund team, you know, right now sitting fifth in the Bundesliga, and said that they're going to find a way through PSG. But it goes back to what we ended our show with last time about the question of, I don't think there is a question now that the most successful season in Europe in terms of leagues has to go to Bundesliga and what they have done, even before this final is played, which, by the way, could have two German teams playing in Wembley, which would be incredible. But for Dortmund to do this right now, I think it again puts another check in that column when it comes to what the Bundesliga is. And I asked on X yesterday, right now, is the Bundesliga the best league in the world? And I got a lot of people saying yes, a lot of people saying no, a lot of people saying, well, now people are just figuring it out. A lot of people saying, yeah, but it's still so top heavy. And, you know, some of the mid-level to lower level EPL teams would still beat your, you know, five and beyond when it comes to the Bundesliga. But it's an interesting argument right now. And proof is in the pudding in terms of the results right now, whether it's Europa or Champions League right now. So congratulations to Dortmund. They came in, they did exactly what they needed to do. They improved from the first game and ultimately came out with two great results, and they get a chance to play in the final.
Yeah, first off, we should make that abundantly clear. We're taping this on Wednesday morning before the Real Madrid-Bayern Munich second leg, so we don't know yet what the final will be. On our next pod next week, we'll recap the Real-Bayern second leg and look ahead to the final. But all we know so far is that Dortmund will be at Wembley facing either Real Madrid or Bayern Munich. Yeah, a couple of points. First off, it's interesting to me that Mbappe is doing things in the opposite order as Messi. He took care of the World Cup early on, winning it at 19, scoring in the final, then scored a hat trick in the next World Cup final. So his international record is unimpeachable, but the Champions League is going to be his big void to fill, his cross to bear. And this was likely his last crack at it with PSG. He's going to presumably leave this summer after seven seasons there, go to Real Madrid, and probably win a couple of Champions League titles there, which will give it this sort of Kevin Durant, Golden State Warrior-ish kind of feel. Nevertheless, I don't begrudge him going to Real Madrid at this point in his career, and whatever he wins there, I think he'll have deserved it. But do you look at his career any differently, the fact that he wasn't able to get PSG over the hump, spending seven seasons there? Does that mean it was a waste, or you still think there was value in him spending that long playing in his home country for PSG, and the fact that he hasn't won a Champions League yet isn't a big knock on his resume?
Yeah, I don't think it's a knock on his resume. I think he is still arguably the best player in the world. His profile will only increase now going to Real Madrid. I don't think it was a waste, and I think it was a valiant effort. And while he certainly, because he's the star and a lot of the focus is going to take whatever criticism there is, I certainly don't put it all on his shoulders. I do think that positionally, it's going to be interesting to see where he shows up, because I still think, kind of like, obviously they're not the same player, but Christian Pulisic, we talk about where is his best place. I still think that when it comes to Mbappe, out there on the left-hand side is his best position. And, you know, we've seen him in different places, and I just think that's where I think he is best. I think that's where he wants to play going forward. And yeah, but I don't look at him any differently. Who knows? Maybe it's too much too soon in terms of him, like you said, winning it right out of the gates as a teenager, winning the World Cup. But I think that he has handled himself well. I think he's gotten better as a player. And whatever failures this PSG team have produced, I certainly don't put them all on his shoulders.
Second point, you know, I have to go here. Gio Reyna. Now, listen, let's not rewrite history. His situation in Dortmund was not good. It was totally understandable for him to look around in January and see if there was a better option where you could get more playing time. But when it ended up being that Nottingham Forest was the only option, a lot of us looked at that and said, boy, it might be better to just stick it out at Dortmund the rest of the season and then see where you are in the summer. He decided to go anyway. And This to me confirms that it was an absolute disaster because he's not getting any more playing time at Forest than he was getting at Dortmund. So it's turned into a wasteful few months in his career, and he's missing out. He could have at least been a part of a team that's going to go to the Champions League final and maybe carved out some sort of role as a super sub. So, man, you look back at this decision by him in January to go to Forest, and I think it's been an absolute disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the mirror to that is Jadon Sancho, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, because that could not have gone any better. And again, there's part of me that agrees with what you're saying when it comes to Gio Reyna, and he's got to be looking at it going, jeez, it certainly would be nice, even in a substitute or even not even coming off the bench capacity, to be part of this historic run to a final. But you know, I also don't fault him for trying to find a better situation. That it didn't work out, could you have seen it? And, you know, certainly people from the outside looked at it and said, yeah, I don't like that. I don't think necessarily you could have seen how badly it went. And especially when you juxtapose it with what Jadon Sancho, who, let's be honest, was also a shell of his former self and was really struggling. And there's just something in the water when it comes to Jadon Sancho and Germany's, for whatever it is. When he is a part of a German team, he's just a much better soccer player.
Absolutely. We'll see if they can hold on to him permanently. They're going to try this summer. We'll see how Manchester United choose to play that. That's going to be interesting. But yeah, Borussia Dortmund off to the Champions League final. And we'll see if Leverkusen can advance to the Europa League final, to your point, and continue this great season for Germany as well. In terms of this upcoming weekend in Europe, the only title that's still up for grabs in any of the top leagues is, of course, in the Premier League. What we have to look forward to there is on Saturday, Manchester City are away to Fulham, and then Sunday, Arsenal away to Manchester United. Arsenal currently 1 point ahead, but they have just 2 games left, while City have 3 games left.
All right, so, I mean, we're looking for the proverbial banana peel, right? So do you see City having any problem with Fulham? I don't. Do you?
I don't. I think this is a dangerous weekend for Arsenal because United are coming off that embarrassing defeat to Crystal Palace. I have to imagine they're going to show some pride at home. I could see them nicking a point off Arsenal the way they did Liverpool recently, and City handled their business against Fulham, and then it's pretty much all over. So the pressure is on Arsenal this weekend because I agree with you. City are definitely going to win their match, so Arsenal are going to have to hold serve as well.
And, you know, I mean, when it comes to Manchester United, you have no idea what you're going to get. It could be incredible. It could be the worst team that you've ever seen. And from an Arsenal perspective, you hope that they suck. But you cannot count on it because they still have the ability to do well. I know the Liverpool season is pretty much over, and it's gone out with a bang. But I have a story. I was in a Uber earlier today, and Teddy, my Uber driver, is a huge Liverpool fan. And obviously we started talking about soccer, and he maintains that Mo Salah is an absolute cancer for a team. And if, you know, Klopp's obviously going, because we had talked before about whether Mo Salah was going to continue there. He does not like Mo Salah because he feels that when things are bad, Mo Salah makes it worse, not only for himself, but makes it worse for others around him. And it was just an interesting take from a Liverpool fan in terms of how they view Mo Salah, or how he views Mo Salah going forward. And as we said last show, we don't know if he's going to be around going forward. But from a EPL standpoint and a standing standpoint, this is not, you know, that big a game here. I do think, and I agree, that Arsenal could have problems with Manchester United, but I also think that this is just going to come down to everybody winning out their games.
Boy, that's interesting. As we found out recently, Uber drivers and cab drivers have very interesting takes on things. But yeah,
Liverpool, he was incredible, by the way. He started talking about everything and just a wonderful conversation with him about a soccer player, and he's got kids in college and all that kind of stuff. And he's very excited about the tournaments. He loves, especially DC. He was talking about DC in particular. And oftentimes when you see the ratings and where the people are watching, DC is always up there. And he was talking about how the bars and the restaurants relative to soccer, and because of the international community and the diversity that exists in this city, they are always places that are just hopping. And so he loves that about soccer. And it's one of the reasons why he's a big fan.
Liverpool are away to Aston Villa on Monday. We both think Liverpool are out of the title race. Aston Villa on the verge of clinching a Champions League berth for next season. It could happen in this game. Liverpool did make some interesting news. They have signed young American Keirol Figueroa to a professional contract. He's been a part of their academy the last few years. He is the son of Honduran legend Minor Figueroa, but he has chosen to play for the United States. We covered him last year in the under 17 World Cup. He's a very good striker, so we could see an American at Liverpool in the coming years.
That's nice. That is nice. That's what I like to, that's what I like to see. I mean, you take flyers on these young kids. I was talking to my mom earlier, and she said, whatever happened to that Freddie Adu kid? You know, and who knows if Keirol Figueroa is going to be another one of those things. But obviously there's talent. We know there's pedigree in terms of where he, of his family. But you don't know. And you don't know until they go through puberty, and the types of players that they are as young players might not always translate, and they extrapolate it out, and it doesn't always always work that way. But hopefully this is good for him, good for his family, and who knows, maybe good for the U.S. in the future.
That is it.
That's it. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do some MLS, but we'll also do U.S. Open Cup madness. Detroit Rock City, baby.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Okay, welcome back. As I mentioned, there was some interesting doings, Mossy, when it comes to the U.S. Open Cup. Some madness, some cup sets, if you will. Where should we start?
Yeah, the round of 32 is off and running. This is the round where the eight MLS clubs that are actually fielding their first teams entered the competition, including defending champions Houston. But they are out because on Tuesday night, they fell on penalties to Detroit City FC. It was a 3-3 draw, and then Detroit prevailed in a lengthy penalty shootout. We know you have a dog in this fight, so you were very excited by that result.
Ownership of Detroit City FC is very happy and very proud at the result that our team had down in Houston. Now, this is the worst possible thing that could have happened to Ben Olsen and Houston. This is also the worst possible thing that could have happened to Don Garber, Commissioner Don Garber over there, especially after the whole brouhaha with the U.S. Open Cup. Now the defending champions and a full MLS team is out of the U.S. Open Cup, and they get knocked out by obviously the Detroit team, but also a USL team. So this is a real feather in the cap for Detroit City FC. Congratulations to all the players and the staff over there, and to all the fans. Huge, huge win. It did not look good to start with, and you thought it was just going to be an easy day for Houston back and forth. They went up 2-0, and Detroit came flying back. Wonderful, wonderful, 3-3, and then they go into penalties. So a fairy tale type of ending for this game. And Detroit City moves on and knocks out the defending champions, exactly what the, whether it's USL or anybody out there that's a fan of USL, wants out of this tournament and has, you know, was lamenting was going to be taken away from this tournament. And while from MLS perspective, it hurts, it's good for this cup. It is good for the US Open Cup to have these types of results. And they're to be celebrated. And I'm real happy. I'm real happy. And for those that don't know, me and a couple of thousand others are very minority owners when it comes to Detroit City. They did a basically a cash call a long time ago, and anybody that wanted to could come in. And so I count myself as one of the few and fortunate, well, not so few, but certainly fortunate owners when it comes to Detroit FC. And we will continue on. Le Rouge.
In terms of MLS this upcoming weekend, we have some great rivalry games, including Hell is Real. Columbus will host Cincinnati. That's last year's MLS Cup winners against the Supporters Shield winners. And we know Columbus still basking in the glow from advancing to the CONCACAF Champions Cup final.
Well, we've talked a lot about Ohio on this pod this week. But it has to be said, you know, one of the wonderful things about expansion in MLS are these rivalries. And, you know, to bring it back to Don Garber again, and I know the ownership over the years have really looked at, from a geographical perspective, the benefits of having teams close and having fans go on away trips and, you know, the ones that you can drive. It really helps. And certainly an intrastate type of rivalry that exists here when it comes to Hell is Real. And for those that don't know, the freeway between Columbus and Cincinnati, there is a legendary type of billboard up there. It has nothing to do with soccer, but it says Hell is Real. I think it was a biblical type of advertisement that somebody put on a billboard there. That's how this was named. It is certainly grown into one of the great rivalries in Major League Soccer. And right now, when it comes to what Columbus is, and to be honest, what Cincinnati has been over the last couple of years, these are two really, really good teams playing in this rivalry. And yes, it's for bragging rights going on. And Columbus certainly is fighting on multiple fronts with CONCACAF Champions Cup right now. But these are fun. So I'm going to tune into FS1. And, you know, I think, you know, we can have a longer conversation, but this is certainly a candidate for the best rivalry currently in Major League Soccer.
Portland will host Seattle this weekend. That had been considered the best rivalry in MLS for the last several years. There was a remarkable 7-year stretch from 2015 through 2021 where one of these teams represented the West in MLS Cup every single season. But so far this year, Seattle in 11th, Portland in 12th. So both teams struggling.
Yeah, so now they get to beat up on each other, but there will be an air of desperation because, like we said, both of these teams need wins. Both of these teams need points. We thought that both of these teams were going to be better than they are showing right now. And in particular, when it comes to Seattle, I know a lot of folks had Seattle as one of the elites and leading the Western Conference right now, and it has just not gone well for Seattle. And look, it does beg the question, because remember when Seattle had a problem and they stuck with Schmetzer and he continued on, and this is only from the outside, but if this continues with Seattle, there is an air and a smell of this getting stale. And again, sometimes it has nothing to do necessarily with the quality of the coach. It's just, it has run its course. And I do think that there are fair rumblings right now when it comes to what Seattle is and actually what Seattle isn't this year that justify saying, has it just become stale? Is there a need for, you know, just a change in leadership when it comes to Brian Schmetzer? And don't worry, Brian Schmetzer is going to be fine. I think there'll be plenty of teams that would love to have him if they were to make a change, or because he certainly has a long leash. You just continue on with this incredible coach and this incredible man and what he has done and give him the benefit of the doubt going forward, because this is not anything that I think Ryan Schmetzer and company up there expected. And from the outside, those of us that looked in, this is not anything that we expected in terms of the poor season that they have had so far.
The Galaxy will host RSL. The Galaxy third in the West, RSL in first place. The Galaxy will get Ricky Pouge back. He missed their last game through suspension.
I mean, this isn't necessarily a rivalry, Ro. This isn't what, you know, a huge rivalry. When it comes to the Galaxy, for me, it's still Galaxy LAFC. I know from a historic perspective, it's Galaxy San Jose. But I think this is really interesting because of what the Galaxy are now. And let's be honest, what Paolo Mastroianni and company have going at RSL. And I think that there is a swagger that is back when it comes to the LA Galaxy, not to the extent that it has been in the past in the Landon Donovan and David Beckham and even back to the Kobe Jones eras of the LA Galaxy. But I do think that there is a palpable type of confidence and, dare I say, swagger when it comes to what the LA Galaxy is. But they're going to have their hands full with this RSL team that believes, I think, that they're as good as anybody in this league. But Ricky Pouge coming back, he is a difference maker.
Club de Foot Montreal will host Inter Miami. We'll see if Messi can pick up where he left off. Remember last time out against the Red Bulls, a goal and 5 assists in the second half, which even by his standards was remarkable. And now Montreal is the next team to have to contend with him.
Will this be his first foray into Canada? I didn't look that up, but this could be interesting, mon ami.
Yeah, he hasn't played in this part of the world as often as you think. When Inter Miami played away to Monterrey in the return leg of that CONCACAF Champions Cup quarterfinal tie, John Strong and I looked this up, and that was his first ever competitive match in Mexico. And yeah, I'll look it up too, but yeah, it could be first time in Canada.
Well, let's see if Messi can do it in Montreal on a Saturday night in a completely different and new country up there in the Great White North. It's going to be fun. And would you put it past him? No, you wouldn't, because the man entertains. The man is a magician, and continually and consistently, it's just every single week. He's blockbuster, like we said, and that's why people are watching. That's why people care. And that's why a lot of you that are listening and watching right now are tuning in. I know many of you out there have plenty of other affiliations and all that kind of stuff, but right now there is a lot of Messi, and rightly so. And I know there's people out there that say, oh, I'm bored about talking about Messi. If you're bored about talking about Messi, then there's something wrong with you. Okay. And don't worry, we'll get plenty of love to everybody else, but there are some changes when it comes to CF Montreal, right, Massey?
Yes, some front office turmoil. Tom Berger reporting that their chief soccer officer, Renard, is on his way out. He's having some issues with ownership. Keep in mind, this is the guy that gave Wilfred Nancy his first head coaching job in MLS after Thierry Henry departed. So if nothing else, he'll be remembered for that, because as we discussed, Wilfred Nancy has gone on to become maybe the most adored MLS coach in history.
But when you say this is the guy, I mean, the guy above the guy is Saputo, and he is notorious for, you know, not suffering fools and moving people on. So this is also the guy or the guys that lost Wilfred Nancy down to Columbus. And it looks like Joey Saputo has had enough when it comes to what's going on up there in terms of the leadership. And he is not afraid to move people out and move people in. So we'll see if that changes their fortunes going forward. Anything else, Mossy?
That's it.
All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for Ask Alexi.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, save $30 on the American-made steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. You can use that hashtag Ask Alexi on all the social media platforms. Keep in mind that our handle out there on the social media platforms is SOTU with Alexi. Or you can call into our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is 657-549-2297. 657-549-2297. Mossy, what do the people want to know today?
First up, a question on X. Matt Johnston asks, do you think MLS will get a bit more respect or love from European-centric fans if the Premier League adopts a salary cap of sorts?
So there were some stories that came out over the last couple of weeks saying that they are possibly kicking the tires when it comes to a salary cap. You know, to be fair to the EPL and, you know, many European leagues out there, they all have some level of restrictions. Now, it's certainly not to the level and organized in the same way that Major League Soccer or American sports are when it comes to a salary cap. But to answer your question, Matt, no. If the EPL, for example, incorporates a business practice or a structure or a part of a structure that originated in American sports, there's no chance that they are going to, first off, even acknowledge where it came from. And whether and the EPL, to their credit, there's a reason why it's the most popular league in the world, okay? And they have picked and choose all sorts of different things from the world of sports, and whether it's Monday Night Football or, I mean, cheerleaders or what, you know, all these different things. Or, you know, the way that they churn the narratives when it comes to the stories and the way they use the media, all these different things. Now, I'm not saying that American sports invented all this by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly when you talk about American sports, a lot of times the first thing that will come to mind is a salary cap. If that were to happen, what automatically a salary cap does, if it's done correctly, is manufacture parity. Or attempt to manufacture parity. I don't know if this is to come to pass. And let's be honest, Europe does not have a great track record in adhering to any types of financial fair play rules out there. So how much this would be adhered to would, you know, would be really interesting to see how it happened. And is it the best thing to do? I mean, there are arguments that having these elites and having these super clubs and having teams that as many people hate as love are actually good for sports and good for leagues right now. And some of this parity just means it spreads out and everybody is kind of the same. And that's not necessarily what people want. But if we are searching for respect or love, as you are saying here, Matt, from European-centric fans of the Premier League or any other league over there, this is a wasted time. Don't waste your time, effort, and your heart. And to finish this up, it feels needy. So don't apologize for what we are, but don't ever expect to be given kudos and praise for the things that we are done that maybe will be implemented by others going forward. Mossy?
I do want to go back to something you brought up in the first segment. I'm not ready to crown the Bundesliga the best league in the world because I like to see a pattern over 2 or 3 years. Any one season's results could be an aberration, but I do think we're entering an era where it's going to be more of a level playing field among the top leagues because of reasons like this. We've already seen the Premier League institute financial fair play restrictions. That's curbed some of the spending. Now they're talking about instituting a salary cap. So I think there's an acknowledgement in England that some of the spending has gotten out of control. They want to sort of bring it down a bit, and that's going to help level the playing field. You're not going to see the gap financially between the Premier League and the other leagues that we've seen. So we could be entering a league where it's more of a level playing field across Europe.
I mean, look, if it does create more parity and there are teams that we normally and traditionally wouldn't associate with being super clubs, and therefore it translates into them having a greater chance of actually winning and being the best and therefore being in Champions League and that kind of stuff, I think that's good. And I say that, you know, still questioning as to, you know, why try to fix it if it ain't broke, and that there are people out there, whether they're leadership or just fans out there, that think that it might be broke. That's interesting to me going forward, because again, it's still where all the eyes of the world are. And when it comes to the Premier League, the most popular league in the world, and I'm not saying it doesn't have flaws or it can't be fixed, but it is a brave new world and a very different type of dynamic on and off the field when you institute a salary cap. And look, the proof is in the pudding, and the devil is in the details, as they say. So what that salary cap, if it were to come about, would look like, that would be interesting.
Next up, another question on X. Mike Walter says, what do you think the effects of the game would be if no more offsides or free substitutions like basketball?
So let's take those separately. The no more offsides thing is an evergreen type of suggestion. There have been games played with that to test it out to see what it would look like. And very quickly, what it ends up being is, in order to defend against what would be cherry picking types of players, everybody has to retreat. And what ends up happening is, since there is no offside, you have to retreat all the way back into your goal for, you know, to mitigate the risk of what's behind you. Now, in the current laws of the game and the current way the game is played, you use that offside to press up, especially when it comes to high pressing, especially when it comes to a high line. You use that advantage that you have of the offside line, and that goes away. The first thing that I'm doing as a defender is I'm backing up, and then I'm taking another step, because as soon as I back up, that attacking player is going to head forward, and it's just, you just keep retreating. And then what ends up being is, if you've ever seen a lacrosse game or something where only certain players are allowed over, and it's very, the midfield is very wide open, vast, stark, and empty, I think that's what would end up happening. And nobody, I think, wants that. The free substitutions, it's more interesting to me and more plausible. And yes, it would change the way the game is played and the strategy of the game. It always bummed me out a little bit that you would go to games, and this is why I was in favor of the five substitutions, where you would go to games and you wouldn't be able to see some players simply because there weren't enough substitutions and there weren't enough opportunities. But One of the things that I actually like about, you know, a hockey or a basketball for that matter, is that you get to see all of the players, and you get to, if you want to, you get to use all of the players. I think from a practical standpoint, getting players in and out, there would have to be kind of a portal or a Stargate or whatever, you know, a place that you have to come in and out of. You can't just go off wherever you want. And I do think it could get crazy and potentially problematic if you're just constantly doing it. So, you know, maybe a limitation, but still with the ability to have players come in and off, and almost in a hockey term, have shifts out there. But again, that would fundamentally change the game. But I'm more in favor of something like that than the no offside thing.
Yeah, on the no offsides, that's the number one thing that casuals bring up to me. Wouldn't soccer be better if you got rid of offsides? And they've tried that over the years in practice games, and it's supposedly ridiculous for the reason that you described. So no, I would tell any casuals that think that the sport would not be better if you got rid of offsides.
All right. Anything else here from Ask Alexi perspective, Mossy?
That's it. We now move on to one for the road.
All right. Let me give you my one for the road here. And again, we are both on the road, Mossy over there in New York and me here in DC. And a little article came to our attention. You know, when MLS started, there was a time, Mossy, back when MLS started in 1996, but there was a real difficult and challenging time in the beginning of the century, I guess, if you will, the aughts, the turn of the century there, where, you know, you could have had an MLS team for, you know, $5-10 million, whatever it ends up being. And now, you know, we're talking into the $500 million just for the, you know, just for the expansion fee. But the valuations of these clubs, I mean, that's the long-term play for a lot of these investors. I know there's other ancillary types of things and real estate and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to the actual teams that they have, the valuations are huge. And that's why when it comes to MLS, when it comes to USL, when it comes to NWSL, we're always trying to figure out. I mean, the fact is that just like a lot of things in life, the value of something is whatever somebody will pay for it. All right. Nothing more and nothing less. But we do try to attach value to clubs. And Sportico over there has come out with the 50 most valuable soccer clubs in the world. And it's a really interesting look at least the perception of these clubs. And while they will readily admit this is not, again, an exact science, you know, the valuation when it comes to a lot of these clubs. And I guess for a lot of people, what the surprise is how many Major League Soccer teams there are in this top 50. So, Mossy, you've read this article and seen this article. You want to give us a little some numbers here?
Yeah, the 14 most valuable clubs are all from Europe. LAFC at 15 is the first MLS club on the list. But then from that point forward, there are tons of MLS clubs, 20 in the top 50. That's more than any other league. So, yeah, to your point, MLS is actually faring quite well on this list.
And I think it is a reflection of the bullishness that, you know, business people have when it comes to what soccer is and what soccer can be. And I know, you know, our friends over there at Men and Blazers, you know, Roger Bennett always says, you know, soccer, the sport of the future since the 70s. It's always been the sport of the future, the sport of the future. But from a pure business perspective, and if you look at the increased valuations, if you had bought an MLS team, like I said, back in when it first started or back in the early aughts and what it is right now, it's pretty amazing. You still got to be able to sell that. And that's the next level for MLS, is when ownership starts changing hands and new owners come in. That's where you get a real valuation of what it is, because somebody puts down that actual money and confirms that this is what it is worth and this is what you paid for it when it started out with. And look, it doesn't just apply to MLS. It doesn't just apply to soccer. We see this with the NFL and others. And these are real assets that have appreciated, in some instances, appreciated dramatically over a relatively short period of time. That's why people are looking at NWSL. You know, you're getting in on kind of a ground floor. And if there is this trajectory when it comes to women's sports, and in this case, women's soccer and women's professional soccer here, and for, you know, $1 million or $2 million, whatever it ends up being, you can have this team that over the next 25 years can grow exponentially. That's some good business. Now, from a American soccer perspective, this is good. This is good. Whether it's entirely true or not, it is good. It is good to have this message out there that these are valuable. When I say these clubs, American professional soccer clubs out there are valuable from a business perspective, even beyond the actual kicking of the ball and the merchandising. And I think it reflects the potential for growth in that still exists out there when it comes to Major League Soccer going forward. So this, I think, is a positive snapshot of what America is, and it dovetails into all the things that we're talking about what's to come, whether it's the summer of soccer that's coming this summer, and then obviously 2026, and that ramp, and that continuation, and when you know we're going to get a Women's World Cup again back here, and all of these great things that are happening when it comes to soccer. You can monetize that if you are smart and if you are able to see a little bit into the future and to have belief that soccer, both on and off the field, is a business that you want to get into. And business is open when it comes to American soccer out there. Mossy, anything before we go, my friend?
Well, I just want to say on this list, Manchester United are number one. And it's fascinating to me the disconnect between the sporting results and the financial prowess of that club. And the Glazers recently sold 25% of the club to Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos. And they put them in charge of all the footballing stuff. They only care about the business side of it now. So the Glazers are perfectly happy with this list. And it's on Ratcliffe to figure out the team and the manager and whether to keep Ten Hag and which players to sell and buy. So best case scenario for the Glazers. Before we go, a couple of notes on our staff. Sean Sullivan is back from his honeymoon in Italy. He produced today's pod. You and I had to adapt back to Sean Sullivan after having Kyla for several pods. You know, they have very different styles, but I think it went off okay. And then spending the last few days in New York City, I can't tell you how much excitement there is for Aaron Schechter's impending arrival. She is headed this way. I was the undercard. She's the headliner. She's coming back to the East Coast. She'll spend some time in Hewlett, Long Island, but a lot of it in New York City. And so we'll be able to hear about her trip when she heads this way.
You know, I'm here in D.C., obviously, with all the, you know, the politicians and everything like that. You were the advance team, Mossy, like the president's advance team. You went in to make sure that everything is secure and ready for her arrival. So it's going to be fun. I went to the White House. I went to the Capitol. I went to the Supreme Court today. My mom lives here in the city. And so every time I come in, we traipse around and get pictures all over the place. So I got the game tonight. Can't wait. It's going to be fun to see, you know, like I said, the likes of John Harkes and Dwayne DeRosario and meet all the politician. And then I'll be back in the studio again tomorrow and working. And the summer of soccer is coming very, very quick, my friend. So we got a lot of good stuff to look forward to. Anything you're doing this weekend?
We've got the Broadway show on Thursday night. Excited about that.
That's right. All right. Well, enjoy that. My best to your family again. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Again, thanks to Sean and everybody for making this work, even though we are on the road. Have a wonderful weekend with all the different soccer that's happening, whether it's domestic or international around the world. And we will talk to you again next week. And until then, and as always, my friends, size the day.
Hey, it's Nick Wright, and Father's Day is just around the corner, and you know what that means. Finding the perfect gift for your dad. As a father myself, I know it can be tough to pick the perfect gift for any of us. This year, ditch the tie and give him something he'll really love. The gift of Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks brings five generations of family-owned expertise, which means quality you can trust. That's why Omaha Steaks has a 100% money-back guarantee. Some of the best meat in the world, some of the world's best beef, naturally aged for unbeatable tenderness, juiciness, and flavor. Omaha Steaks sent me a box of my own to try, and I could not be more excited to fire up the grill with my family this spring. Little known fact about me, the last and only actual job I've ever had was selling steaks door to door. That's a true story. Back in, gosh, when would that have been? The summer of 2002, 2003, I was a door-to-door steak salesman in the greater Kansas City area. Maybe I'll tell that story longer form on the air one day. But back to Omaha. This Father's Day, Omaha Steaks has put together the perfect package for listeners of First Things First. The deluxe Father's Day gift, which includes Omaha Steaks, butcher's cut top sirloins, juicy boneless pork chops, deli-style gourmet jumbo franks, and their legendary Omaha steak burgers, all of this for just $89.99. Head over to omahasteaks.com and use the promo code FIRST at checkout to get four additional burgers absolutely free. That's right, 24-mouth watering entrees for just $89.99 when you use the promo code FIRST at checkout. Don't wait till the last minute to get Dad something he'll love. Go to omahasteaks.com and use the promo code FIRST for the perfect gift for Dad this Father's Day.